We're going to do another few selections from the Haggadah, so that it will prepare you for the night of Pesach. I don't know, did anybody give a shiur on Erev Pesach that occurs on Shabbos? We haven't prepared you for that? You know, everything simply starts 24 hours earlier, that's all. I don't know, Phil most probably has figured out already when the next time we're going to have an Erev Pesach. In 13 years? 13-14 years will be the next time Erev Pesach will occur on Shabbos. I think it's going to be about 40-50 years until Erev Pesach will occur on Shabbos, when it's a leap year. Well, there'll be a Purim Meshula, Shanah. I don't know. I can't figure these things out. You know what? We should all Gesundheit was 11, and we should celebrate it all together. So basically, I'm not going to go through everything that has to do with Erev Pesach and Chal B'Shabbos. Your local Orthodox rabbi is going to take care of that. And I assume that every one of you has a local Orthodox rabbi, and most probably there will be shiurim given about that. The only thing that fascinated me this time, and it always does, the question of Seudah Shlishit on Shabbos. Seudah Shlishit on Shabbos. So I'm afraid that everybody gets all really troubled about it. I don't think we get so upset about Shalosh Shudas. On every Shabbos, it's a very good thing to eat Shalosh Shudas. The Gemara says wonderful things about Seudah Shlishit. But you know, you could be Yotza with cake, with fruit, with all sorts of other things. But what do we do on this Shabbos? So there is a Magen Avraham that says that you divide the Shabbos in the morning meal in two. Which means, however early one gets up in the morning in order to daven early so that we can eat before the time that chametz becomes prohibited. So then you sit down to eat the Shabbos meal and you wash, and then early on in the meal you bench and you take off a half an hour, wash again, so that you've divided the meal in two. So the fact is that this is the Magen Avraham, and I think that many people did this. I've personally always had problems with it because it's enough for me to have one meal at one time. For me to have two meals at one time, it's not eating. So of course, since we're learning the Haggadah Leil Shimurim from the Aruch HaShulchan, the Aruch HaShulchan has a completely different approach to it all, and it is something that he says even his introduction to the Haggadah, you don't have it, but his introduction to the Haggadah is a discussion of Erev Pesach that occurs on Shabbos, and at the very end, he tells us what to do, and he is very fascinating. He says, "Usudat shlishit ein b'Shabbat zeh." There is no Seudah Shlishit on this Shabbos. Now, part of the reason he says is because he disagrees with the Magen Avraham, who says to divide the Seudah in two. Why does he disagree with the Magen Avraham? Because Seudah Shlishit is in the afternoon. It can't be Yotze Seudah Shlishit in the morning. Can you be Yetzer the Friday night Suda Shabbos in the morning? Or the Shabbos in the morning Suda Friday night? There are three meals. One is supposed to be Friday night, the other is Shabbos in the morning, and the other is toward the end of Shabbos, late Shabbos in the afternoon. To divide the Suda in the morning in two, the Aruch HaShulchan disagrees with that, because then you're eating a Suda Shlishis at a time that's not Seudah Shlishit's time altogether. Furthermore, he says,
The halacha obviously recognizes that there are times where there is no suda shlishit, and he gives the classic example. What about Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbos? Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos. What's going to be with suda shlishit? What's going to be with suda shlishit? You know what's going to be with suda shlishit? There is no suda shlishit on Yom Kippur shechalis for Shabbos. And if anybody wants to be machmer and be yotze, you understand, with payers for food, so he has a big problem. That man has a big problem. Now, the problem, of course, what is the problem with the suda shlishit? Why did the Magen Avraham say divide the suda in the morning into two? Because to have a suda erev Pesach in the afternoon is problematic, because one is not supposed to eat a suda. First of all, because you should enter Pesach with an appetite, and furthermore, the ikar of suda shlishit is with bread or no sarah bread. You can't eat because it's after zman. It's also chametz is already also. So what are you going to do? You're going to use matzah. So the halacha is you're not allowed to eat on Erev Pesach matzah. You're not allowed to eat on Erev Pesach matzah with which you can be yotze at night. So you can't eat matzah. You can't eat chametz. You can't eat matzah. Ah, so there are a number of other real possibilities. The other real possibilities are matzah ashida. What is matzah ashida? Matzah ashida is matzah that has either fruit juices were used, or what they call egg matzahs. So now you should know that since there's an opinion that says we don't eat egg matzahs on Pesach, and if you look at the boxes, I don't know what they do here. They have the same thing here as that in the United States. They tell you on the box of egg matzahs or whatever other matzah shira, they tell you on the box of matzah, take a look in Shulchan Aruch or a Chaim such and such. But there it says that those matzahs were used only used by children and the elderly. I don't see any children here, so it doesn't apply to any of us. But the fact is that on Erev Pesach one is permitted to eat matzah ashira. If one has the need to make a shalashudas, you can do that, but not by the time it's 3 hours before Yom Tov. In the afternoon, 3 hours before Yom Tov, you can't eat matzah anymore of any sort. By the way, it also says that you can make shalashudas on matzah mevushelet, cooked matzah. And somebody called in and asked me, what's cooked matzah? And I couldn't answer, and then all of a sudden it struck me. I have to call him back. Knevela! Knevela! That's the kind of shayla he shouldn't have asked the rabbi. He had to ask the balabusta that shayla. It's just that we had knevelach and so we go all of a sudden, knevelach. This is matzah mevushela. But then the Aruch HaShulchan, remember we're talking about Aruch HaShulchan, also makes a very, very fascinating comment. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch. Now the Shulchan Aruch is made up of the Beis Yosef and Rabbi Yosef Karo, and then there are the additions and the emendations of the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isselish. So he says that you can be Yotze Shalashudas with Peros, Basar v'davim, fruit, meat, or fish. So he says, you know what's fascinating? Usually when they use those three together with regard to shalashudas or other sudas, they say basar v'davim or peros, or fruit. Why does the Ramah say fruit here first? He says fruit first, because by right over here, the less substantial the shalashudas is, the better it is. If you can be yetzer with fruit, then be yetzer with fruit. If it has to be, if you need more, and you know we may need more, it gets very difficult to go through a long day Erev Pesach and a long day Erev Pesach, and you know you're kamat chalishing when it comes to the Seder. So you know people, certainly young people like us, we have to be very careful to make sure that we have the nourishment that we need. So certainly, if one feels the need for potatoes, also the dugin, so certainly one should do that during the course of the day, just not closer to nightfall. So anyway, so here, since we're looking at the Leil Shimurim and the Aruch HaShulchan, he always has a very practical approach. So in the Shulchan Aruch he says that yes, you can use matzah ashira, you can use matzah mevushelet, but I think his most important contribution to the discussion about shalashudas on Erev Pesach, Shechalias B'Shabbos, is the fact that he holds you can't be yotzei shalashudas in the morning. Shalashudas has to be after midday. That's the time for shalashudas. So therefore, he does not agree, though don't get me wrong, there are many people who will do that. They'll be up early and they'll wash and they'll walk and they'll walk and they'll wash and they'll wash again. You know, God forbid, you know, we always have to be aware of the fact that we respect all opinions in halacha. We respect all legitimate opinions in halacha, because there are legitimate differences of opinion as well, and we have to learn how to respect other opinions, and that may be one of our problems today. That I'm not going to go off on a tangent. How do you like that? Now you're going to sit there and think, what did he have? What satanic ideas did he just have in mind that he's not going to share with us? Alright, so I'll share it with you. I really, when I make decisions, boy, do I stick by my decisions. I get a little upset about the machloket that is taking place now with regard to brain death. Brain death as determining, is this considered death, and therefore one can remove organs from a body for transplant into other bodies. So there are definitely two opinions, I would say, that most probably mainstream or a majority of opinions hold today that brain death is considered death, and that makes the possibility of transplant a great deal easier. And then there are those who say no, brain death is not considered death. There has to be a complete cessation of all of breathing and all sorts of other things. So now these are two legitimate opinions. But then I don't know. I see in my neighborhood there are signs up, "Lo Tirzach, Lo Tirzach, Thou shalt not kill." And I was, who are they saying thou shalt not kill to? Those who hold that brain death is considered legitimately halakhic death are murderers. That's not the way you conduct a halakhic debate. We have to learn the idea that there can be differences of opinion, and elu divrei Elokim chayim, these and those are the words of a living God. It's precisely, nearly, precisely the same machlokas as there is with regard to the heter mechira or not heter mechira. Those who are opposed to heter mechira is safe, it's osir, it's gefela, so the Eibushter upheaten. Better to eat chaser than I didn't mean that. Just take it back, you know, that was a little. Well, I know why I'm saying that. oh, if I get into this, there will never be a shir today. There was a fellow, there was an unfortunate fellow whose name will go down in history, who wrote a letter to the editor of the Jerusalem Post yesterday. And in the in his letter, he said that, listen, he doesn't like, he lives in Highland Park, New Jersey. I don't have to tell you the name, go find the name yourself. This name is a name that's going to go down in history. And he says he and the members of his modern Orthodox community cannot consider Aliyah because they don't like the policies of the present government. They don't like the way the government treats the settlers. There's a tremendous amount of corruption. And in a very brief letter, he lists a litany of all the avodas. And therefore, you know, you can't expect a call on us to come on, yeah, get out of your mind. Right. So there are, Baruch Hashem, five or six Gudzigiten who responded, and their responses appear in this morning's Jerusalem Post. Each one is a classic in its own, each one is great. I can't even tell the both of you, but one of them says that, listen, you know, you don't like the government, so if you don't like the government, so you don't fulfill mitzvahs. You don't like the government, so we're poor. You understand? What does one thing have to do with the other? Because you don't like the government, so you're not going to live here. You know, you're going to spite somebody. It's great. I'm telling you, I'm not even doing a good job on it. But we've gone far afield. The point that I wanted to make is there's an extremely important concept in halacha called Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. We can live with differences of opinion. These and those are the words of a living God. We can live with the opinions of those who hold that Hetem Afira is the finest form of keeping Shemitah. And we can also tolerate those who disagree. We can live with those who hold that you should divide the Suda Shabbos in the morning. Erev Pesach, Shachal Yisbe Shabbos, you can divide it in two, and be Yosei Shalosh Shudas at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And then also we can live with the position of the Arachav Shulchan, who says there is no such thing as Shalosh Shudas in the morning. Shalosh Shudas is only at supper time. That's when Shalosh Shudas is. All right, but the most important thing is, I don't know why I got onto this, or why I get myself into these things. But of course, we're going to do B'dikas Chametz on Thursday night, which is the night of the 13th, not the night of the 14th. We're going to burn the Chametz Shabbos Friday in the morning. what a spreading system. We're going to burn the Chametz Friday in the morning. And at the usual time, and then of course Shabbos in the morning, we have to be concerned that we finish eating chametz. Now the fact is, this I think already is common practice. Nobody cooks a chametz to get Shabbos. Shabbos is completely Pesach. There again, everything will be Pesach Kalim, or if not Pesach Kalim, there'll be Kalim Chabbat Amiyim, disposable. Sahara, how are you Yotze at night and in the morning, how are you Yotze Suda Shabbos? So they have a separate table, and at that separate table you have a lachmaniyah for each person. You wash, eat some challah, wipe your hands, and go have a complete pace of the gemil. That's what we do Friday night, and that's what we do Shabbos. Because Friday night and Shabbos in the morning, there really is no other Eitzah, except of course for somebody who wants to eat egg matzahs or matzah ashira. That's also an acceptable, absolutely an acceptable approach. So what else is there left to know that your local Orthodox rabbi is not going to tell you? That's it.
Huh?
Yeah, so the crumbs, so that what we do with the crumbs, either down the toilet or out into the tzardeya outside. That's what we're supposed to do with it. Otherwise, of course, the most important preparations, certainly in the last few years, the most important preparations for Pesach are to pack up things well so that you have everything you need, either by your children where you're going, or in the hotel that you're going to, and Gesundheit, Klal Yisrael should have a hard kosher Sameach, and it should be a very peaceful one. Alright. The opening section of the Leil Shimurim
Halach ma'anya. Yeah, the sheiks. Halach ma'anya. The achala of a son of Adam the Mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Now we uncover the matzah. We uncover the matzah. Everybody sees the matzah. And our minig at home always was that my father would take the matzah wrapped up in something, put it on his shoulder, and we would walk around the house, we'd walk around the table. Halach manyo, this is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in Egypt. Kol dechfin, anybody who's hungry, yeseh v'yechol, let him come in and eat. Kol ditzvich, anybody who's in need, yeseh v'yivsach, shall come and share the Korban Pesach with us. I tell you, I had a shayla from somebody from Chutz Laaretz, not from Highland Park. Somebody asked me, didn't really ask me shayla, he wants to give me money that I should distribute. I should distribute to people who are in need. He gives me money every year, but he says he wants it to go to Frumin people only. Shermish Shabbos people. I said, I don't want the money. I will not do it. At the beginning of the Haggadah it says, whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. And whoever needs a Korban Pesach should share my Korban Pesach. And it doesn't say in any of the Mefarshim on the Haggadah, when is this true? If he's a Shem Shabbos and he doesn't eat Hetanafira. And yeah, only then can I invite him into the house. No, so I said, call the tzvich, anybody who needs. If there's somebody who's going to come to me who is in need and is not a Shem Shabbos, I will gladly give him the Pesach. Okay. He's going to give me the money anyway. Hashata Hocha, this year we are here, Lashon Abba, be out of Israel. The year to come it will be in the land of Israel. Hashata Avde, this year we are slaves. Lashon Abba, B'nei Chorin, the year to come we are B'nei Chorin. You know, it's always difficult to say it. We're sitting here in Eretz Yisrael. What do you mean, Lashon Abba, be out of Israel? Next year we will be in the land of Israel. So it has to be looked at from a point of view that, you know, halavai, nothing should go wrong with this great process in which we find ourselves that this year we're in Eretz Yisrael and next year we're in Eretz Yisrael. But then again, there's another thing.
Where are you reading?
And then there's another possibility. Remember, this is being said in Aramaic. This is being said in Aramaic. Maybe it was being it was put in there for the Babylonian Jews who had not come on Aliyah, that they should say Hoshata Hocha, this year we are here, Lashon Abba, next year Mirz Hashem we will come La'ar di Yisrael. Now I really don't know how this fellow from Highland Park, who 2 weeks before Pesach has decided he's not coming to Eretz Yisrael because he doesn't like the government and he doesn't like all of the corruption, how in heaven's name is he going to say the Haggadah Hoshata Hocha? Lashon Abba, B'arad Yisro, what are you talking about? I'm not coming next year to Eretz Yisro. You got to get rid of all those guys over there. No, sorry. Okay, mention. Not as you mentioned. There are not as you mentioned in the belt. Anyway, the Leil Shimurim, Haggadah, I'm really just going to take you through the first paragraph over here. Like Yeshua Fadesh, he wants to explain this halach ma'anya al timayma Yeshayahu Anavi, according to the words of Yeshayahu. Now, down at the bottom I have the psukim that he quotes from Yeshayahu. Let's take a look down at the bottom. Shimurei lai rodfei tzedek v'vakshei Hashem, listen to me, O pursuers of righteousness, O seekers of Hashem, habituel tzorchu tzavtem, look to the rock from which you were hewn, v'el makeves bornu karton, and at the hollow of the pit from which you were dug. What does he mean? What does he mean? In the next passage, he explains exactly what he means. In other words, what do you mean, take a look at the rock from which you were hewn, at the pit from which you came? So he says, Habitu, take a look at Al-Avram Avichem, take a look at your father Avram. That's where you came from. And Sarah, who bore you, who gave birth to you. Ki echad kirativ, because I called him one, va'abarcheu, and I blessed him, va'arbeu, and I multiplied him. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, Lev Shmur, my brother, says, you know what the pshat in this pasuk is? That what does it mean, ki echad korosiv? So our English says, when he was yet one alone, did I summon him. I called on to Avraham Avinu. He has a unique, very beautiful pshat.
Where are you reading?
The Aruch HaShulchan's unique pshat is the following. Ki echad korosiv, I called him one, means that by nature, by the physical makeup, neither Avram nor Sarah were capable of giving birth. They were not capable of giving birth. Do you know what that means? What it means, therefore, is the bringing into being the creation of the first Jew, Yitzchak, was an absolute act of miracle. Ki echad korosiv, he was one. And he and Sarah each were to remain one alone by nature. But you know what I did? God says, Va'avorchehu, and I blessed him. Ve'arbehu, and I multiplied him. So he says, you know what it means? It means that the entire coming into being of the Jewish people began with a great miracle. And you know what the purpose of that was? Never lose sight of the fact throughout history that you were brought into being by a miracle. You continue to exist. You're continuing to exist is an absolute miracle. You're different than any other people on the face of this earth. Do you know what that message in Yeshayahu is? That message in Yeshayahu is a message of hope. It's a message of great encouragement, great strength, that regardless of how bad things may look, and they do look very bad, they do look very bad. There's no question about it. They do look very bad. I mean, there are all sorts of forces, satanic forces in this world that are arrayed against us. There are awesome, powerful nations that would like to see us simply disappear from the face of this earth. And if they can do it, they will do it. The message to us is, said Gunish Telfon, the beginning of the Haggadah, and I want to extend it by saying that that's going to be the theme and the message of the whole Haggadah. Never make the mistake of thinking, just listen to me, forget the paper, just listen to me, look at my face, watch my expressions, and you will have a great time. You'll enjoy it. That's the one problem with text. That you don't get lost. Just look at me. The message of the Haggadah is a message of hope. Anybody who thinks that the purpose of the Haggadah and relating the story of the Exodus from Egypt is some kind of a throwback into, you know, nostalgia about the old days is making a terrible mistake. The Haggadah is a here and now story. The Haggadah is speaking to us in this generation. It's not simply a matter that we have to relive it and we have to go over every medrash that describes Yitzias Mitzrayim. If I will learn all of the medrashim about Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, and I am not going to relate it to the condition of the Jewish people today, I believe that one has missed the point of the whole story. It's not simply a story in which we delve into history. There is the message, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim is a message of hope and encouragement and strength to the Jewish people. So the Baal Orach HaShulchan says, now I'm going to read this first paragraph. We can explain it according to what Yeshayahu. Shimu elai vel tzedek. This is the pasuk we learned below. Mevapshi Hashem habit vel tzurchu tzartem. Take a look at the rock from which you were hewn. Vel makeves bor nukartem. And the hole from which you were dug. Habit vel Avraham. You can take a look at your father Avraham. El sara techolelchem. And sara who gave birth to you. Ki echot korosev. He was supposed to be one. And I blessed him. And I multiplied him. What's the pasuk that comes afterwards in Yeshayahu? You have it down at the bottom. Ki nicham Hashem Zion. God consoles and comforts Zion. Nicham kol charvotah. He comforts all of her ruins. Vayosem midborok Eden. And he will make the wilderness like the Garden of Eden. Va'arvata. And her wasteland will be like the Garden of God. Joy and happiness will be found in her. Toda, thanksgiving, the kol zimra, and the sound of music. Do you know what Yeshayahu was saying? Yeshayahu was saying that the comfort for Tzion and Yerushalayim comes from taking a look at Avram and Sarah. Avram and Sarah brought a child into the world miraculously. So Tzion, don't be worried. You may look like a wasteland at some moments in history, but that's not the way you're going to remain. You're going to turn into a garden of God, because there is a Rabbeinu Shel Olam to whom we are locked eternally, and he's going to take care of us. So now, back into our text, yeah. The Hanavi Menachem, the prophet is consoling La'ayefei Hazman. He is consoling those who are exhausted by the times. The moment, every moment in history for Jews has been an exhausting period in history. And he's consoling them and telling them, "Sheyitchasku be'emunat HaKadosh Baruch Hu." They should be strong in faith in God, v'yitzapu li'Yeshua, and they should anticipate the salvation that is going to come. If you take a look from the point of view of nature, with all the forces that are arrayed against us, it's going to be a pretty difficult haul for us to emerge unscathed. That's why the Navi says, Shimu Eli, listen to me, those who pursue righteousness, those who seek God. All of Jewish history defies nature. It's nothing new. That's the way it started. All of Jewish history is completely in opposition to the natural order of things. According to the natural order of things, we should have disappeared beneath the sands of time millennia ago. But we didn't. We're a stubborn, stubborn, eternal people. All right? So therefore, he says. That's why he says, "Shmo Eli, Kohan, Hagashalachemi, the Malam Yatera." Way God conducts himself with you is beyond nature, and the proof is from Avram and Sarah. From them you were hewn, and from them you were cut. Shalohayu ruyam apia tevel holitzera. They were not according to nature; they should not have given birth. And Avram Avinu was like a rock that doesn't give birth. And Sarah Imenu was like a board that's empty, a pit that's empty. And that's why he says, Ki Echad Kerosev. This is his great pshat in the pasuk. Echad Kerosev, from the time that I called to him, he was destined to be one by nature. But I turned him into a family. I turned him into Klal Yisrael.
Where are you reading, please?
So I'm saying that this is the introduction to the Haggadah. That the Haggadah is a story of hope. And do you know how the story of hope begins? The story of hope begins with a message to all of those who are less fortunate than us. The one that doesn't have what he needs for Pesach. The one that is in terrible need. The poor, the penurious, the poverty-stricken. Those who are trying to survive below the poverty line. They are a segment of the population that in a sense are overcome with hopelessness. And there's... You can't talk about the great hopes of Klal Yisrael for the future when there are people in our very midst who feel hopeless right now. So the first thing that Haggadah begins with expressing the idea that, you know, we've got to take care, first of all of those who every day for them seems to be a day of being hopeless without any way to get out of the cycle of poverty in which they find themselves. If we take care of our people, you know what? The Levation is going to take care of us. If, God forbid, we abandon those who are in need, I don't want to say what can be. The important thing is, and the fact is that Jews know, I'm telling you, if you want to begin to love Jews, then pace of time is the time. I don't know, there are big, you've seen some of the big tents around Yerushalayim? Yeah, but no, they do much more than that. They're giving out shoes, and they're giving out suits, and all sorts of clothing you can get, and all sorts of food you can get there. Right, just at the beginning, Givat Shaul, there's a tent that you can have to place 10,000 people in it, and they're giving out, there are people who are giving out all sorts of things. It's amazing. I'm telling you, I think the Benjamin Pashit just looks down upon us before Pesach and says, now guys, if you'd be like this a whole year, the goal of our training, you're coming. So that's the beginning of the Haggadah. The beginning of the Haggadah. And just another few lines into the second paragraph. Ubezeyesh lefarish. That's how we can explain the pasuk. Leil shimurim hu laHashem lahotziam me'eretz Mitzrayim. A night of guarding, a night that God watches. It's a night that was set aside by God to take them out of the land of Egypt. Hu ha'layla hazeh, that's this night, la'ashem, shimurim l'chol b'nei Yisrael l'dorotam. It's set aside for the Jewish people for all generations. So he says, just like this night was set aside in advance by God, that this is the night he's going to take them out of Egypt, and he's going to take them out of Egypt in a manner that defies nature in a miraculous way. So you should know, so too in the future, this night is set aside as a time that God will again redeem the Jewish people in a miraculous way. So we have to understand, basic thought over here is the idea that the entire Sifu Yetzias Mitzrayim, the story of the Exodus from Egypt, is not simply a throwback to things that happened many years ago, and it's a story of once upon a time. It's not once upon a time. We're talking about today. We are taking all of the events of yesteryear, and we are talking about them today. And therefore you're going to have V'hisham d'alav Hussein v'lanu, and that stood us in good stead to our fathers and to us. Shebechol dor v'dor. That paragraph defines the message of the Haggadah. Shebechol dor v'dor ondem aleinu l'chalotenu, and every generation they arise against us to destroy us. Hakadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miyadam, and God saves them. I mean, we're not living in a time where a powerful nation plans our destruction and announces it to the whole world. Announces the whole world, and the whole world is pussyfooting around. It's unbelievable. It staggers the imagination. Sometimes I have a feeling that we feel, it's not serious. this Ahmad ibn Ijed, Yamachmev, is a clown. He's not a clown, he's not a clown. He's a man with a powerful nation, and who knows how much money behind him, and how many companies are selling him weapons, and how many companies are buying his oil from Germany and further. You understand? There are real threats to the Jewish people, and sometimes I think we walk around like, Nishmir, Nishdir, it's fine, it's going to be alright, the Rebbein Shem is helping, I mean, the Rebbein Shem is worried, so we also have to be worried with it. And then of course, yes, for the second half of the Haggadah, Shvayich HaMoschel HaGoyim HaShem Lo Yidolcho, pour out your wrath against the nations that know you now. I don't know, everybody's been going crazy about this this movie Fitna, should have been called Sitna, this 17 minute movie in which on the screen you see quotations from the Quran, and then next to it you see its fulfillment with buses blowing up, people being killed. And now the message of this film is that the Quran, Islam, calls for violence. Hatred of Jews, the Western world, they're real killers. It's a religion of killers. They're the most powerful, force in the world today. We're talking about, I don't know how many billion people, and they're all arrayed there against us. It's unbelievable. I don't know, 20 years ago, well, certainly 40 years ago, we laughed at the Egyptian soldiers who fled in the Six-Day War. They took their shoes off so they should be able to run across the desert. You understand? We made fun of their inability to do anything right. Oh boy, things have changed in 40 years. Things have changed dramatically in 40 years. There's an awesome power out there called radical Islam. Now, and I don't even think that that's the correct description. It's not the pshat, it's radical Islam. That's Islam. Islam is radical. No, it's not like there are good Muslims, there are medium Muslims and baby Muslims. Islam seems to be a religion that calls for violence against any infidels. Anybody who's not a Muslim is an infidel. And an infidel, achaz dinai, there's one din, an infidel either can convert to Islam or he can be killed. That's what's going on in the world today. Anybody who doesn't keep that in mind during the course of the Seder has missed the Seder. Next. Turn over to the other side. I'm on the next side. You with me, everybody? I'm on the other side, and it says number 3 over there. Ma'ase v'Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Yehoshua v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. This is the story that's brought in the Haggadah, the story that's told about Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva v'Rabbi Tarfon. Shavu Masuba v'Bnei Brak. They sat down to the Seder in Bnei Brak. How many people are there? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon. And they were telling the story of the exodus of Egypt. That whole night, until their students came and said to them, Rabbeinu, our rabbis, the time to read Shema in the morning has arrived. There's a great deal to be said on this Mishnah. I think the approach that's taken by the Leil Shimurim is a very, very beautiful approach. All the Mepharshim are concerned with this Mishnah. They are concerned with this story. It's from the Gemara and it's brought here in the Haggadah. Of the five who are listed here, only one lived in Bnei Brak, and that was Rabbi Akiva. Now, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua were the Rebbe's of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is their student. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had been president of the Sanhedrin.
Where
Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Tarfon was also one of the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva. The problem with this story is, what are they all doing by Rabbi Akiva in Bnei Brak? I think it's Rabbi Eliezer who says that a person should always be home for Yontif. There's a Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer says a person should always be home for Yontif. Heaven, this same Rabbi Eliezer says he should be home, and he lived in Lod. Rabbi Eliezer lived in Lod, and he is a Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva, and he says he should always be home, and he ends up the Seder for Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehoshua lives in Pekin. Do you know where Pekin is? Long before it was a Druze village with a few Jews living there whom they want to get rid of, Rabbi Yehoshua was a resident of a great Jewish city that was Pekin in the Galil. Of the Gedolei Yisrael of the time, there was only one who was not present, and that was Rabbi Gamliel, who was the president of the Sanhedrin, and he was with the Sanhedrin. I'm not even sure where the Sanhedrin were at that time. They may have been in Yavne, they may have been in Shvaram, they may have been in Tzipori, they may have been in Tveria, but Rabbi Gamliel has to be with the Sanhedrin. I suggest that if Rabbi Gamliel would not have been the Nazi of the Sanhedrin, do you know where he would have gone to the Seder? He would have gone to Rabbi Akiva's Seder in Bnei Brak. So all the Mefarshim want to know, what are they all doing by Rabbi Akiva? Now, it can take me an hour to give the answer, or I can give the answer in a few brief words and then try to elaborate. There was something about Rabbi Akiva that was so powerful, so overwhelming, so awesome, that they all not merely appreciated Rabbi Akiva, they felt deeply indebted to Rabbi Akiva. All of these people were present at the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. It's after the destruction. It's after the destruction. I mean, simple proof that it's after the destruction is that the Seder is taking place in Bnei Brak. If the Beit HaMikdash would still be in existence, they would be in Pesach, in Yerushalayim with the Korban Pesach. It's after the Korban. After the Korban, what happened was there descended upon the Jewish people a sense of absolute futility, despair, absolute hopelessness. It's all over. One man became the symbol of hope. One man became the symbol of hope. And we find it throughout Talmud, we find it. What about that famous Mishnah at the very end of Masechta Yuma? Om Rabbi Akiva! Rabbi Akiva said, Ashreichem Yisrael, you Israel are fortunate. Lifnei miyatim et haharim, before whom are you... Do you become purified? Umi mitayin eschem? And who is the one who purifies you? Avichem shabashamayim, your Father in heaven. Ma hamikveh mitayir satmeim, just as the mikveh is that which purifies those who are unclean. Av HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitayir Yisrael, God purifies Israel. What's he talking about? What is Rabbi Akiva saying? Do you know when Rabbi Akiva said that Mishnah? Rabbi Akiva most probably said that Mishnah, that great statement of his was said, the first Yom Kippur of the Churban HaBayit. What did Jews do for hundreds of years? They would gather in the Beis HaMikdash and they would watch the Kohen Gadol bring all of the sacrifices that were the source of atonement. And here you have a people now without a Beit HaMikdash, without the service in the Beit HaMikdash. Ashrei, fortunate, we say, is the one who saw the Beit HaMikdash on the Yom Kippur. Marek Cohen. And here, despondent, broken, And in the midst of all of this depression, along comes Rabbi Akiva. He most probably sang it. Fortunate are you, Israel. They're looking at him. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And Rabbi says, what do you mean what I'm talking about? We don't have the Beis HaMikdash? Yes, terrible. But it doesn't mean that all hope is gone. Who purifies us? Lifnei Hashem titaru, before God. There's us and God in the world. And someday we'll have the Beit HaMikdash again. Do you know what piece of jewelry Rabbi Akiva had made for his wife? Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. The Gemara talks about a piece of jewelry. It was a piece of jewelry in the Gemara before Naomi Shema Kaleh Shalom made a song out of it. A Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Yerushalayim Bidahava in Aramaic. Yerushalayim Shel Zahav was a brooch of some sort that had the skyline of Yerushalayim on it. And Rabbi Akiva had one made for his wife. Do you think that there was just he wanted to give her jewelry, or did he want to express the idea that Yerushalayim lives within us, and some days we're going to see this Yerushalayim rebuilt? There's a Gemara that says that once Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, Bikesh Ha'am Le'Nanem, and the people started, they started falling asleep. So Rabbi Akiva exclaimed, "Let the daughter of one who lived 127 years come and rule over a world with 127 states. Let Esther, who is a great granddaughter of Sarah live 127 years, and Esther rule over 127 states." What's going on over here? First of all, I'll tell you the truth. I don't think I could fall asleep by a drosh of Rabbi Akiva. What do you mean the people wanted to fall asleep? And this is the way he wakes them up? I tell you, 127 here, 127 there, right? No, that's not what the Gemara means. Bikesh Ha'am Le'Hitnamnem, the people were beginning to fall into a stupor of hopelessness. They had lost the ability to act. They weren't ready to stand up and fight. So Rabbi Akiva comes and he gives them words of great encouragement. And he says, take a look. And I tell you now, with the Leil Shimura that we learned, now a great-great-granddaughter of a sorrow who was not capable of having children by nature, she's going to come and she's going to be the ruler of 127 states. If you would have told that to somebody before the event, that the Hayyidish Meidala is going to become the ruler of the queen of the whole world, they would have told you you're out of your mind. God works in miraculous ways with the Jewish people, so wake up from your slumber, wake up from your sleep. Rabbi Akiva became the symbol of hope. And here I have the famous Gemara. I'm going to run through the Gemara. We have 5 minutes. I'm running through it. And it has English translation over there, right here on page 3.
Which Gemara
is it? This Gemara, I wanted to say, good. This Gemara is the very end of Masechet Makot. Now there's one great thing you will gain by listening to this Gemara. Don't anybody try and fall asleep. I can't imagine anybody falling asleep. You know, it's become the minig for years now that a bar mitzvah boy makes a siyum masechet, finishes a gemara at his bar mitzvah. It can be Masechet Megillah, which is 32 pages. It can be some of the other smaller masechtas. One that's usually chosen, it's a beautiful Masechet, is Masechet Makot, which is 24 pages. It can still take the Bar Mitzvah boy and his father or any rabbein that he hires in order to do it. It'll take him a whole year to do it, but at least he finishes the Masechet. So here, he will get up and he'll say this Gemara. This is the end of Masechet Makot. Next time you're at a Bar Mitzvah and he's making a Siyum of Masechet Makot, you'll know exactly what he's saying. And you'll be able to say, oh yeah, I know that Gemara, you know. Oh, wait till you hear the end. The punchline is great. Ukvar Hoyerab and Gamliel, Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva in the house, and Badef once, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva were traveling on the road after the destruction of the temple. Vishamu, call Amari Shalrami, me, Palton, they heard the sound of the Roman crowds in the plaza. Mayav Esen and Mil, 120 mil away, and they began to cry. In other words, they understood, they were thinking about the great success, the power, the might of Rome. And they began to cry. Rabbi Akiva was tzachek. Rabbi Akiva was smiling. Amru lo, so they said to him, why, what reason are you smiling? So he said to them, v'atem itlimatem bachem, why are you crying? Amru lo, so they said to him, hello, Kushiyim, Shemeshtachavim, La'atzabim, Etatim, Averitz, Gechavim, Yoshim, Beta, V'ashke, these heathens who bow down to idols will burn incense by idolatry, live in security and in calm. V'ono, we, Beit Hadom, Raglei, Eloheinu, Saruf, the temple which is the footstool of our God is consumed. V'lonifke, and we should not weep. Amal answer, Akiva said to them, "Lekachani yitzachek, for this very reason I am smiling." Umar lo obrei ritzonakach, if this is the way God rewards those who transgress His will, those who are shayim are having such a good time, can be sure that the osei ritzono, those who do God's will, when they get their reward, oh, will it be how much more so He will do for them. Now you have to understand, in this Gemara, I saw this just recently from Rav Neri Yosef Tzadok Ruach. He says, the rabbis, they list all the rabbis, and they began to cry. They began to cry. You know what it means, they began to cry? Rabbi Akiva's also crying. Rabbi Akiva's also crying. But then something changes. They continue to cry, and in the middle, Rabbi Akiva begins to smile. That's the great part of the story. Rabbi Akiva sees everybody crying, and he's crying with them. And as he's crying, he begins to think, here are Gedolei Yisrael, and they are all crying. What hope will there be for us? We have to pull out of this depression. And Rabbi Akiva makes a conscious decision. He moves back from crying. Genug gewend. Enough. What we have to do now is present to the people a face of hope and determination. If Klausler's leaders are going to walk around crying, and this one is crying, and that one is crying, they will simply disappear and disintegrate from their crying. Rabbi Akiva, in the middle of his crying, has made a decision. We're going to pull out of it. And he begins to smile. B'shuv pam achas. Next story. This brings us to the end. One other time, they were going up to Yerushalayim. Kivin shigil laharat sofim, when they came to Harat Sofim, they tore their garments. When they reached Mount Scopus, they were able to see the city of Jerusalem and its destruction. They rent their garments. Who rent their garments? All of them rent their garments. Rabbi Akiva included. They tore Kriya. They saw fox emerging from the Holy of Holies. His chilu hang both, and they began to cry. Rabbi Akiva mitzachek. Here, the story is different. If you notice the words in the Gemara, they began to cry, and Rabbi Akiva smiles. I don't believe that Rabbi Akiva is crying with them now. Rabbi Akiva has torn his garments, that's enough. Now Rabbi Akiva has to be strong. They can cry, but he can't. He does not permit himself that luxury. So then they said to him, for what reason are you smiling? So he said to them, and why are you crying? So they said to him, Makom Shekosabo, the place about which it says, Hazor HaKorev Yumos, that the non-coin comes close will be put to death, and now foxes are walking through the Kodesh HaKodashim, the Lo Nifke, we shouldn't cry. So Rabbi Akiva said to them, that's why I am smiling. And he goes on to say, that if the prophecy of destruction has been fulfilled so, in so precise a manner, then I believe with perfect faith that the prophecies of consolation will certainly be fulfilled. And which is the prophecy of the prophecy of consolation that he uses? We always say, Zayd Rabbi Akiva would be in Yerushalayim today. He wouldn't be smiling. He would be jumping with joy. He quotes the great prophecy in Zechariah, Od Yeshu Zekenim Uzekenos Berchavot Yerushalayim. Old men and old women will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim, and the Medrash goes on, and the Pasuk goes on to say, and children are going to play in her streets. So he says, now that I see that the prophecy of destruction has been so precisely fulfilled, I believe with absolutely perfect faith that the prophecy of renewal and reconstruction will be true. What's the story? You know what this whole story is? The Maisa by Rabbi Eliezer, all of them sitting by Rabbi Akiva, because they are living through another terrible period in history, and the purpose of it all is to be able to see that we're going to get out of it. If Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is only about what happened in the past and does not take the present into account and look at our present situation and be filled with a sense of hope that we're going to get out of it, then we have missed the point of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And of course, ultimately, we know we have to say that Shokha Noschal Agoyim, pour out your wrath against the nations who want to destroy us. We have to say that with great, great kavanah. Should have a wonderful young to very much.